As we get older, we need more protein in our foods to be able to stimulate the same amount of muscle protein synthesis. And then we also need enough resistance training. So there's two stimuli for muscle building, and that is your protein intake in your diet and the resistance training that you do. So as we get older, we need to increase those quite a bit to be able to still maintain our muscle, not even to just build muscle. But what we see with elderly people is they just start to diminish their protein intake quite a bit. So people aren't really aware of this, and I think that's what our role is, you and all the influencers, the people that are spreading the word, is that protein is not scary and it's actually super important.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Reinvent Health podcast. Here we get to chat to some of the world's most interesting and influential people about everything to do with physical, mental, and spiritual well-being. If you want to make healthy changes and live a better life, you are in the right place. Please don't forget to rate, leave a review, and share with everyone who wants to live their best life. And now your host, Nikki Robertson.
Growing up as a world champion athlete, Kirsten Flanagan developed a passion for understanding the science of nutrition, leading her to a BSc in human physiology and biochemistry and a medical honors in exercise science. Having experimented with many different nutritional strategies, Kirsten realized that achieving a state of metabolic flexibility is the absolute foundation to nutrition. Not only does it provide a performance advantage, it's the key to a long and healthy career as an athlete. While traveling abroad after her studies, Kirsten had the unique opportunity to work alongside some incredible mentors, including Sean Wells, early on in her career, who have guided her and helped develop her global network in the nutrition, health, and wellness space. In this episode, we chat about understanding your nutritional needs, as well as the vital importance of dietary protein and tailoring your supplements. Kirsten's passion for health optimization and biohacking keeps her actively learning and researching the latest health tools and technologies and connecting with like-minded people. So, Kirsten, thank you so much for joining us today on the Reinvent Health podcast. I'm really excited to dive into all sorts of things about nutrition for everybody, but specifically for athletes. And I've done quite a lot of research on what you've been getting up to in the last couple of years. Let's start by just you telling us who you are, what you love about what you do, and how you got into it.
Sure. So firstly, thank you. It's really cool to chat to you today. So I was an athlete as a child, and obviously growing up into my teens, and then so I was doing marathon canoeing, and I competed in an international level for that for 3 years. And during that time, I was getting out of high school and going into university, and I actually attended a lecture by Tim Noakes. Well, just to say before that, I was kind of training and just following the mentality that you've got to train as much as possible and you'll get the results you need. So I wasn't really focused on the whole recovery side of things, and definitely not the nutrition side of things. So I ended up going to a lecture with Tim Noakes, and he was actually one of my professors at UCT when I studied there, but this was earlier before that. And he just spoke about Banting, and it was the early days when he was introducing it to a lot of South Africans, and I just understood a lot of it. Having studied physiology and biochemistry, I understood what he was saying, and it made a whole lot of sense to me. And what I ended up doing was I just started experimenting immediately, and obviously adopted a very low carbohydrate diet. So then after doing that, I was training quite hard, and I had I was doing my last year of paddling for South Africa, and I had the world championships coming up in Denmark later that year. And I lost a lot of weight, like unnecessary weight that I was carrying. And I became very lean and lighter in the boat and a lot faster. And that was my best year I performed. So I got a silver medal. So I was pretty happy with that. And I thought I was doing everything correctly. Just obviously the results showed. And during that time, I actually changed a focus a bit. I wanted a bit of change. So I started doing triathlon and I started training for that. And I realized what I was doing with my nutrition wasn't sustainable. And I was kind of just pushing myself into the ground and training lots and not fueling adequately. And I just wasn't fully aware of what I was doing. So yeah, I could go long and far, but I couldn't go hard and the intensity wasn't there. So it was quite an obvious telltale sign. And I realized I had to do, to change something. And I stopped competing for a while. And this was after university. I went traveling overseas for a bit and ended up going to health and wellness conferences and events and that sort of thing, just to broaden my knowledge in the area and connect with like-minded people. And I ended up being mentored by Sean Wells for a little bit, for about 6 months in the US. And that was quite a cool experience. And yeah, the traveling kind of changed the way I approached the work in South Africa. So when I returned, I kind of knew I wanted to do something in nutrition and health and wellness. And I knew I wanted to be to have a big impact and kind of not just do any old job. I wanted to do something that really meant a lot to me and I knew could impact many people's lives. So that kind of where I left off, and I joined Taylor Blend when I returned from my travels. So I've been with them for just over 2 years now, and that's a bit of my background.
Let's start with, let's go back to when you went and you did that lecture with Tim Noakes. And yes, I mean, using fat for fuel makes all kinds of sense. And, from what I've seen is it initially works for most people, and eventually there comes a point where you start needing to put carbs back into your plan, which it sounds to me like that's what eventually happened. But it's not just a case of putting carbs back into your plan. There's a way of thinking about specifically sports nutrition, which I want to dig deeper into with you as we go along. It's not just a case of now you carb loading, because that's a highly simplistic way of thinking about things. But before we go there, in your opinion, and yes, based on perhaps your own experience, but maybe also people that you've worked with, is do you think there's an age and a stage for a high-fat, low-carbohydrate nutritional regime for athletes? And why do you think it tapers off or stops becoming so effective eventually?
Mm-hmm. That is a great question and something I struggled with myself. So I think the low carbohydrate, high fat way of fueling for an athlete, I think it is very beneficial when it comes to the full Ironman competitors, the long marathon runners who are really racing competing at a very low intensity. There's an argument to say that the elite performers will likely still be competing at quite a high intensity, even if it is 42 kilometers or whatever it might be. But in those states, you are wanting to tap into your fat sources. If you aren't able to do that as an athlete that's doing a race longer than 2 hours, there's no ways you're going to be able to compete at those levels and with other people. So by default, actually, most athletes are fat adapted and very good at burning fat just because of the nature of their training. And they allow their body to get into that state where they've probably depleted all of their carbohydrate stores and they need to tap into their fat stores. And they probably get into that a couple of times a week during their training sessions. So not every single training session they do is going to be completely fueled 100%. Maybe they won't get all their meals in throughout the day. And yeah, so by default, they're good at burning fat. But the reason you want that is burning fat or fatty acids, they allow more ATP to be generated per molecule of fat that's burned in comparison to glucose. They're also a cleaner and more efficient fuel source. So it will generate less reactive oxygen species and less damage while you're burning them. in comparison to carbs. So there are benefits of being in that state sometimes. And for endurance athletes, you are under a lot of stress. Those who are doing the longer events are under a lot of stress, and their bodies are building up a lot of oxidative stress, inflammation, and some things. So if you are allowing your body to rely on fat instead of carbohydrates, you're giving your body that extra edge to not be so stressed or not be so burdened by the stress that comes with the exercise. But with that said, not having enough carbohydrates is also a stress on the body. So what I like to say is that it's all well if you want to do be a fat adapted athlete and be keto and banting for your races, but there must be times in your life or phases, certain months of the year, where you do follow, where you are less strict with your keto diet, where you increase your carbohydrate content, just so that you take away that stress burden on your body. Because carbohydrates do, I'm not sure on the exact physiology of it, but they do mitigate the stress load on your body from all the fasting and all the excluding carbohydrates.
Yeah. So what's really an important takeaway that I'm hearing you say is any extreme is going to cause a stress, whether it's extreme sports, extreme eating. You know, we've got to at least come back to some kind of homeostasis, which is what the body strives for anyway.
I mean, you see a lot of people out there that talk on social media or coaches and stuff, and a lot of the time it's very black and white and it's very one-sided, and this is the way to go because it worked for them or it worked for some of their athletes. And it's just easier that way because there's no ambiguity and there's no and then people don't like saying just balance is healthy. So, but at the end of the day, it is actually balance, and it is kind of cycling in and out strategically, which is probably the key.
Yeah, it is easier to just be Puritan and give somebody a piece of paper with an instruction on it, because, and then if they don't follow that, you're not really responsible for the outcome. But, you know, balance and personalization takes a lot of work. And in my experience working with athletes, is it's a trial and error process, especially athletes who are not experienced, is you try with one methodology and see what the results give you, and also be willing to, at some point, change that methodology as well, depending on their amount of sleep, the other stress in their lives. You know, a professional athlete's life is quite easy compared to a corporate athlete, for example. So someone who has a family, has a job, and is still wanting to compete at a sort of, for argument's sake, a marathon type of level. And, you know, and as age progresses, our needs change. So whether we're talking to athletes or we're talking to anybody just wanting to live healthier, longer, with less stress placed on their body due to environmental factors, is figuring out what works for you seems to be the key time and again.
Exactly. I think it's a bit of making yourself your own N of one experiment and just adjusting as necessary. And that's where, like, we're lucky where we are right now with this explosion of sensor technologies that we have access to. So all these wearable devices, and you might just think it's quite basic, tracking our steps and our heart rate, but the things that are becoming available to us, we can now do ECGs on our Apple Watch, which is absolutely crazy. Have our CGM on our arm, which might become even more accessible to many people. And having this sort of information, we're all becoming better at using this data and gathering it. It just puts puts health into people's hands gives them more control. So you're right. So if you are your N of one experiment, I think that is the only way that you can find what's optimal for you.
Yeah. Speaking of wearables, what do you use at the moment? What is your favorite? You know, I think we're all biohackers on some level when you get into this industry and you love digging. Yeah. So what's your favorite wearables?
I actually have a Garmin at the moment, and I've always used Garmin. I've never gone the Apple Watch route, just I use Apple devices, but I just haven't got into the Apple Watch. So I just Garmin for tracking all my sport, my activities. And it's quite nice if you don't have much time, you just want to do a quick HIIT session or a couple of weights at home. It's really nice to track that, and it's quite easy. tracks my steps and all that sort of thing. It's just a daily and constant reminder for me to keep moving and keep healthy. I don't really rely on it. I don't, a lot of the time it will tell you you need 48 hours of recovery after you've gone for a quick hike or something. And that isn't the case. So I think just taking these sorts of things in context is really important. But yeah, I do, one thing I really do enjoy doing is tracking my sleep. And I think that's really valuable to me. Even if I can tell if I have a glass of wine or something before I go to bed, which is not that often, but I can tell my sleep is definitely impacted. And sleep is obviously a huge factor when it comes to your performance as well. So I just try to avoid those sorts of things that I know disrupt my sleep. But just, you know, having a quick look on your app on your phone the next morning takes about 5 minutes. You can see how much REM or how much deep sleep you got and whether you can do that intense session that day or not.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense not to buy into it 100% because these are just not exact, you know, measurements. It gives you a guideline. Exactly. And it's easy to obsess over them and check the data all the time. So yeah, there's a lot to be said for just, you know, using it as a tool, not an absolute.
Exactly. I just about obsessing, I had my continuous glucose monitor on my arm about a month ago and it was crazy to see. I had an apple and what the glucose response to that was. And I was actually quite relieved, not relieved, but it was not having it on my arm anymore and continuously scanning to see what foods were doing. It was quite, I was obviously more relaxed about what you eat, but it's really informative. I think everyone should have the opportunity to do that for at least once in their life so they can kind of gauge, is that bowl of oats that you have every morning that you think is the right thing for you to have, is it really the right thing to have? Because it might just upset your blood glucose control for the rest of the day.
Exactly. Yeah. I used the CGM with a couple of clients. It's about 25 people now we've used it with. And it is an absolute game changer because, yes, what you think is healthy might be, but not for you. And it also shows that, you know, on the days that you are partaking in at least 45 minutes of exercise, whether it be weight training, cardio, it doesn't really matter how that picture changes. So we theoretically understand that exercise impacts our glucose response positively, but until you see it in your own blood, you don't really get it. So it's massively useful, especially for people who are hitting a plateau and just not getting it. So moving on, what are you doing at the moment from a training perspective and how are you fueling your training sessions and your competitions if you're competing at the moment?
So at the moment, I'm just the main exercise I'm doing is cycling and mountain biking. And I've just gotten into that in the last couple of years and I absolutely love it. So it's a lot of endurance sport, a lot of endurance activity. So I'm very... at the moment I'm quite lean and don't need to lose any weight. So I'm trying to find the balance between doing enough endurance training and still maintaining my muscle and, still keeping healthy. So it's a bit of a difficult one because one of the main things I tell people if they're wanting to build muscle is to reduce the amount of cardio that you are doing. So it's a bit of a catch-22, but at the moment when I wasn't training as much, I would do intermittent fasting. I would try and aim for at least 13 to 16 hours of fasting overnight. So that's just stopping eating at 7 p.m. and eating again 10, 11 in the morning, which was totally doable for me when I wasn't training too much. But now that I'm doing a lot of endurance training, I'm burning a lot of calories throughout the week, maybe not every single day, but I try and eat a decent breakfast, a decent lunch, and a decent dinner. I would normally eat two meals a day, but I'm now increasing it to three meals a day. And one thing I really do focus on with my nutrition is protein intake. So that's just very, very important for me, just getting protein into every single meal that I do have. And if it's a snack, I'll also try and make sure that it's got protein in it. And what I'm doing right now, maybe I'll share a little bit about this. I've got some blood tests. I saw a functional medicine practitioner and we ran a whole lot of blood tests and organic acids tests. And there's just a few things that I need to fix with my health and my hormone levels and immune system as well, kind of down-regulating that sympathetic nervous system and increasing the parasympathetic side, so being more relaxed and optimizing recovery. So with that, I'm following an autoimmune paleo diet, and that's proved quite challenging for me in terms of getting in carbohydrates in for the endurance training. So I'm still experimenting with that and still juggling it myself. So right now I'm in my own end of one experiment and tracking it and seeing how things go, but it's been quite interesting for me.
That's really important because, you know, most people only go and get bloods done, especially something like organic acids, when there's a crisis and when they've got fibromyalgia or something that their GP can't diagnose. And what you say, I mean, you're a healthy, young person who's active. Mm-hmm. It's rare, unless you are in this industry, to go get some blood tests done. And I can't emphasize how important that is, because optimizing health, preventing issues down the line really depends on us taking proactive steps before something goes wrong and really understanding what's going on in the blood. I mean, I've started it with my 11-year-old. She's not scared of needles anymore because we do routine, just the basics, just to make sure that everything's fine. Because why become an adult or later on in life in your 40s and 50s where there's issues when you can prevent them early on? Yeah. And yes, if you can, you can almost see into the future if you can deal with these things and get a real understanding of what's going on in your body. So I think, you know, for anybody listening who, yeah, I suppose anybody who's active and wanting to really optimize their health is, you know, preventative screenings. We know about breast cancer screenings and ovarian cancer and all these other sort of hugely necessary cancer prevention screenings, but no one really thinks about mm-hmm. going and doing something a little bit more advanced. And I think it's really, really important that if you want to live a long, well, healthy, optimized life, well into your 90s, maybe longer, is to start doing this as soon as possible. So that's really important.
Yeah, I fully agree. Yeah. And it's great that you've got your 11-year-old doing that from such a young age. I wish I had done that as well. And I think it doesn't have to be scary for most people. Yeah. You don't have to go and get tons of blood measurements. Perhaps maybe you should consult with someone and see what the basic requirements might be. So I would do, well, vitamin D is obviously very, very important. Definitely. Just general blood count, and CRP can tell you about your inflammation in your body, and your mineral levels. You can also take a look at and see if you're lacking in magnesium or potassium and that sort of thing. And then once you have that information, and also the B vitamins you can look at. And once you have that information about just a few vitamins, minerals, you can see if there's any red flags anywhere. And that's even you can supplement. If your diet's already healthy and well-balanced, as you might think it is, but you're still lacking in certain areas, you know, you can supplement or just change something up to be able to change that. And then you're going to prevent a lot of hassles on medical bills down the line.
Absolutely. So, I mean, give us an example of, I know you're trying or experimenting with a paleo type of anti-inflammatory program, but what is your, if you were doing a race or an event, what would that day look like for you?
Sure. So usually a race will start at about 7 or 8 in the morning. So I'll wake up early, maybe 5:36 or maybe 5 o'clock actually. And then I'll definitely have a coffee, often blended with some collagen. I will have a decent breakfast, which would probably be a good source of carbohydrates as well as some fats. So at the moment, it would be a sweet potato smoothie with protein powder in it. So I cook a sweet potato steamed, maybe 1.5 sweet potatoes. And that's I can't give you the exact grams of carbs, but it's at least 20 to 40 grams of carbs in there. Add some honey, maybe a date. I'll add my protein powder in there. At the moment, it's just unflavored protein powder.
So it's a whey protein, say isolate, for example.
Yeah, so it's actually a blend of isolate and concentrate. And then it also has some creatine in it. So that's what I'll add into my smoothie. I usually, when I'm not on the paleo, autoimmune paleo, I'll have some nut butter or something like that for a bit of extra fats, and maybe a bit of avocado, which makes it super nice and creamy, which is delicious. So that's what I'll normally have, and it fills you up quite a bit. And then I'll have I've obviously got my coffee for just before, which caffeine does help for races. And then during the race, I'll have some sort of carbohydrates, and it's usually one of those, I like the Woolies bars that have nuts and fruit in them. Those cashew and blueberry, or maybe those little date balls. But fine for my cycling races, it's more endurance. Mm-hmm. I can get in those more whole food based, where I'm not, sometimes a gel in that, I'd rather not use those as much as possible. So if there's a shorter, more intense race, that might be necessary, but at the moment it's not. So I'll have those during the race. And then for my drink, I don't like to drink too much of the carbohydrates, so I'll have more electrolytes and essential amino acids in my drink. And I'll also probably have some L-carnitine and a few other amino acids that are going to help with the endurance. And maybe a little bit of carbohydrates, 10 grams, 15 grams or so. So yeah, that is what I'll have during the race. Straight after the race, I'll again have some protein. There's still some argument whether that protein building window is necessary directly after you train. Obviously, this is endurance session, so it's not really muscle resistance training, but it is still important to replenish directly after you are doing such a long and stressful race or training session. So I make sure that I get something in directly after that. And if it's going to be a lunch or something, it'll definitely be a decent amount of protein, which is usually maybe some mince and some vegetables, or a bunless burger with some avo and noodles or something. So it's always whole foods based, but with the priority on protein. And if I've done a race, then it'll have to include some carbohydrates as well.
So let's talk about protein, because it's your passion as much as it is mine. And, you know, no one goes there. It's a big frustration for me. Even with a lot of functional medicine practitioners, they get this sort of worried look when you talk about protein. And I don't know why, because I've yet to meet anyone who's had an adverse reaction to the right amount of protein. People have adverse reactions to all sorts of things, but not protein. And there still seems to be this pervasive myth that protein, I suppose a protein shake that doesn't just have whey concentrates and isolates and all sorts of other things, and it is a problem, of course. But then you could say the same about any food. You know, the chemical load on just spinach, for example, can cause massive problems. But, you know, I would like to say that it's definitely my mission to re-educate a lot of people in the health industry about the benefits of dietary protein, because of the fact that it's, you know, if muscle is an endocrine organ and we are building, and it's the organ of longevity and youth, and we are making sure that as we age, we are not going down that natural sarcopenic decline, the potential for somebody to be active and healthy and avoid diabetes into sort of aging is really important. And it's key to preventative medicine, as far as I'm concerned. So please share with us your thoughts on you know, what the protein picture is for the average person and also for the athlete.
Just being a young female in Cape Town, I can see the whole shift of mindset from is going more towards being plant-based and vegan, and people just generally think that is the healthier way to go. And it is making people healthier, because they are focusing on plant foods and minimizing all the crap that we normally eat. So it's definitely a good thing, but they're missing the whole protein part of it. And it's super, super important. I mean, you already touched on the sarcopenia. So as we get older, then I don't know what the exact age is, but once you reach our 30s, 40s, and definitely it increases as we get older, but the ability for us to build or utilize protein we get from our diet decreases. So as we get older, we need more protein in our foods to be able to stimulate the same amount of muscle protein synthesis. So And then we also need enough resistance training. So there's two stimuli for muscle building, and that is your protein intake in your diet and the resistance training that you do. So as we get older, we need to increase those quite a bit to be able to still maintain our muscle, not even to just build muscle. But what we see with elderly people is they just start to diminish their protein intake quite a bit. And it's just either through lack of appetite, or they think that it's healthier to reduce the amount of protein as they get older. So people aren't really aware of this. And I think that's what our role is, you and all the influencers, that people that are spreading the word, is that protein is not scary and it's actually super important. And then just with the athletes on the other end of the spectrum, protein is just super important if you are using your body to its maximum limits on a daily basis. So you want to be able, protein stimulates recovery and muscle building and that sort of thing. So if you're not getting enough in, your body's just going to be wasting away, and especially if you're doing training every single day. So yeah, I think we can't highlight its importance enough.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And yeah, there's also the myth that protein is indigestible, and it couldn't be further from the truth. You know, if we're having a digestive issue, we've got a gut issue, not a protein problem. For many people, raw vegetables are completely indigestible. And no one says, well, cabbage is indigestible, don't eat cabbage. I say that. But lots of doctors will say, yeah, eat your vegetables, eat, not paying attention to the fact that, you know, it depends on that person's gut health. And, you know, if you find that you aren't digesting, first off, I don't think we should be eating anything close to bedtime. I think there should be at least a 3-hour gap, because you can't rest and digest. You can't go and eat a big meal and then lie down and expect to feel comfortable or sleep properly. So I think, you know, that's one of the keys. And I really do believe our biggest meal should be in the middle of the day. So yeah, protein is digestible if you've got a healthy gut. Anything's digestible, and the adverse is true if you don't have a healthy gut. So the secret is really fixing the gut. And one of the key components to good gut health is L-glutamine. You know, it's almost the most simple fix to almost any gut issue is, yes, probiotics to an extent depends on how they're made, how they're stored, who's making them, what's in them, what you've got an overabundance of to begin with. So it's quite a specific test and trial situation with probiotics, frankly. But something like L-glutamine, which is a protein-derived amino acid, is really important for gut health. So going on I hate using the word detox because it's a cliche, and omitting protein from your diet is probably the worst thing anyone can do. Because, I mean, as you know, we need amino acids for detoxification through the liver. You can't facilitate detoxification without, you know, bonding amino acids and making those fat cells water soluble. So there's so much that's been forgotten, and this is the magic key here to long-term health. So I think getting the word out there and just gently encouraging people to eat between 1 gram and 2 grams per kilo of total body weight a day, which is not high protein. That's the starting point.
Yeah. So I think you bang on there. I think between 1 gram and 2 grams is going to be optimal. It depends on your activity levels. Are you an athlete? You're going to have to go closer to the 2 grams per kilogram of body weight. If you're inactive, you definitely want to be, not definitely, but you can probably just be on the lower end of that and just be fine. So, it's super important to get that in each of your meals throughout the day. So you're wanting to get 20 to 40 grams in each meal that you have. And if you prioritize protein in your meals, and then you can, once you've prioritized protein, then you add in the fat and the carbohydrates. And that's where the tricky part comes in, is how much fat and how much carbohydrates do you add? Yeah. And that's when the factors come in, like how much exercise you're doing, what your goals are, those sorts of things. So if you prioritize your protein, it's so easy to add additional fats to that and carbohydrates to that. So if you are prioritizing carbohydrates and fats, you just get a lot of energy dense calories in your food. Yeah. And it's, so what I like to say is that protein, it's obviously optimal for longevity. We discussed the sarcopenia, and actually I just listened to a podcast with Chris Masterjohn.
Yes.
And the I don't know if it's the leading or the greatest number of deaths caused by, first is diabetes, and second would be injuries, yes, or fall. Yeah. So that's huge factor. If you and then after that is cancer. So, and then cardiovascular disease, I think, is just before that. So falling or having the risk of injury in as you get older is a very high risk of death. So if you're taking your protein, if you have enough protein, and you can support your bone health and your muscle growth, which we've already touched on. But the other side of protein intake is metabolic health. Yes. So that's going to help you with diabetes. So the more protein you have, the more muscle mass you'll have on your body. If you are also doing the resistance training, that lean muscle mass on your body, it acts as a sink for all the fuel that you're taking in, specifically carbohydrates. So if you have more muscle mass in your body, you can eat more calories from carbohydrates, and it'll go into your muscle cells and be utilized for energy and stored as glycogen. If you have more fat mass and less muscle mass, so you have no muscle at all, you're not going to have the space to store those carbohydrates, and your diet's going to have to be a lot more strict. So it's a really nice tool that you can just use in your advantage to be able to eat a more wide range of foods.
Yeah. And, you know, it sets up, you know, satiety as well. So when you do pick the protein first, you're not going to eat as much. You're going to switch on your natural stop button a lot quicker. I mean, we can all go through a loaf of bread with honey and peanut butter. Like, you can just keep going. There's no off.
Exactly.
If you had to add like half a Nando's chicken to that, you'd stop really quickly because it's a really good example.
Yeah. And then one thing you can also see with the CGM is, if you have your protein and a little bit of fat before you have your carbohydrates, say I did it with an apple. So if you have your protein, eggs, and a bit of avo for breakfast, and then you have an apple afterwards, that blood glucose spike or response is a lot lower, and it comes down a lot quicker if you have that apple in a fasted state. So yeah, it's quite interesting how we can use these macronutrients to change the way our bodies respond. It's incredible.
It is. And it's so easy and it's actually very pleasurable.
Yeah.
And there's always people who are worried, am I eating too much protein? Mm-hmm. Doesn't it damage the kidneys? And I actually asked Professor Noakes this question, and he said, you'd have to eat so much protein. You'd have to eat in excess of about 5 grams per kilo every day for weeks on end.
Exactly.
And then you would know, because you'd feel terrible. You'd feel like you've been hit in the head and you've got the worst case of flu.
Yes.
And he said it takes an enormous amount of buildup before that happens, before it even impacts the kidneys. But yeah, people with renal disease, and you've got to be careful if you've got an existing predisposition. You know, you don't want to put any kind of, you don't want to be eating processed foods even before you start looking at protein. You don't want to be drinking a can of Coke if you've got kidney disease. You know, that's going to probably cause more damage than dietary protein.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think we've got to be reasonable here.
Yeah, I mean, I think when it comes to too much protein intake, I think there are two exceptions. It might be someone who has a kidney disease, then you might want to limit your protein intake. And perhaps if you have cancer, you might not want to be increasing protein intake. So that just brings me, I'm not a medical professional at all, so I can't really, this is just what I understand. And brings me to the point about mTOR activation. So mTOR is it's a complex or a compound in our body that we have, and it's stimulated by protein intake as well as, so it's stimulated by ATP, which is calories coming in the form of food and energy. Also L-arginine and leucine, which are two amino acids found in protein. So essentially just stimulated by protein intake. And when it's stimulated, you're in the fed state because you've just taken in calories, and your body is in a building and growth phase. And insulin is elevated in this phase, and IGF-1 is elevated in this phase, which are both growth hormones and storage hormones. So that's when people argue that if you're eating too much protein, you're stimulating mTOR too much, and you're continuously activating that growth pathway, and it's dangerous for cancer growth and tumor growth and That is totally understandable. So what I like to just highlight with this, I talk about protein a lot, and I just want to highlight the fact that we need to balance this phase of growth with the fasted state as well, and be kind of cyclical about this whole approach to protein intake. So in the contrast to that fed state where mTOR is activated, you have the fasted state where it's not activated and you have lower ATP levels, and there's various other pathways that are stimulated. And this is the whole longevity research about fasting and why it's beneficial, or calorie restriction is so beneficial, because these pathways that are elevated when mTOR is not activated create like a state of healing and cleaning. Autophagy is the word that people use for breaking down old and damaged cells and clearing them from the body. And we need this phase of cleaning and healing to be able to build and regenerate in that fed state when we do stimulate mTOR. So if you have one without the other, it's not gonna work that well. And you kind of want to just be in this cyclical phase where you have this fed, this fasted state, but you also have enough build of fed state. And you'll find the biohackers and the people who are very keen on the fasting and calorie restriction because they want to live till they're 120 often do too much on the fasted side. Yes. and are not allowing their bodies to regenerate and rebuild. So it's quite, there's plenty to talk about there, but it's yeah. quite an interesting balance that we need to be aware of.
Yeah, we should actually do another episode just on fasting and knowing when mm-hmm. to stop and how to time it, because that's another topic in and of itself.
Yes, yes.
So a couple of years ago, I think it was Mark Hyman was talking, he had a guest on his show, and they were talking about mTOR, and what had been found was there's a polyphenol in rosemary that stops too much mTOR production. So when you cook with rosemary, so if you're having your big steak, which is supposed to be terrible, and putting inverted commas, if you actually cook with rosemary, what's expressed out of those oils in that plant stops or greatly reduces the expression of mTOR. And funnily enough, there's a polyphenol in olive oil as well that does exactly that. And this doctor that he was interviewing recommends about a quarter cup of olive oil through the day. And they've seen incredible clinical results from an mTOR study that when you add, again, Mediterranean type of foods, you're getting this benefit. So there's so much more to it.
Thinking about taking in compounds and like the rosemary, a lot of people also think that you can be in the fed state, but you can take these fasting mimetics, which are basically supplements. So I think metformin is one which is used for diabetes, and it's very impactful there. It has a major impact on people who are diabetic or pre-diabetic. But and I think berberine is another herbal extract that's is similar to metformin.
Right.
But you can't take these fasting mimetics while you're in a fed state, or continuously be in a fed state and use these fasting mimetics to try and simulate that fasted state, because there's so many other factors that come into play. Right. Like, that's just one thing with supplements, is people need to use them strategically as well.
Precisely. So let's just take a sidestep when you're talking about supplements, as you work for a company called Taylor Blend, and Taylor Blend's been around for a long time. I remember using or tailoring supplements back in the day when they first started. So let's chat about the future of personalized supplementation from your point of view, where it is, where it's going, what you're hoping to get to with highly personalized supplementation.
Yeah, so I touched on a bit earlier, like how the technology is advancing. So we're gaining new tools every day with in terms of health tests and gathering all this health intelligence data that we can have access to. So from blood tests and functional tests, whether it's urine or blood or hair mineral analysis, whatever it might be. We have microbiome tests as well. I think that's typically taking a stool sample, but I think they've actually developed a microbiome wipe, which is a little bit more consumer friendly. And there's obviously the DNA test or nutrigenomics, which is also quite popular and becoming more and more widely used. And then we have the sensor technology, which I also mentioned, is being able to track real-time data. So we can put in your implement some sort of intervention, whether it's tweaking our diet a little bit and seeing how that influences our biomarkers on a daily basis. So our sleep and exercise and heart rate and HRV or heart rate variability is another one we can look at. But all this technology is allowing us and giving us the tools to be able to personalize the way we treat people a lot better. So in the past, we've standard or generic products that we buy on the shelf, and you kind of don't really know if it's right for me, is it the right dosage, is it the right form? You're not really sure. You just heard that you should be taking extra magnesium, but maybe you don't need it. So being able to gather all of this information up front and prescribe or identify the exact nutrients that an individual needs for optimal health is, I think that is where we're at right now. And in the US, it's kind of a little bit more advanced than we are, but we are definitely following in the same footsteps and are not too far behind in this. So there's a couple of companies in the US that do some sort of test, or whether it's a blood test or a DNA test, and then they give you your personalized supplements. But often this is like in the form of a little sachet that you have a couple of pills in there, and it might be vitamin C, vitamin D, and it's still at a standard dose. So it's your fixed, everyone has the same amount of vitamin C or same amount of vitamin D. So because you can't really customize the dosages in pills that easily. It's definitely one step closer, and it's a great solution. But what we do at Tailwind is we have powdered supplements. So it allows you to add the exact dosage to that product. And then, so you can choose your ingredients, you can choose the specific dosage that match your health data that you've gathered. And it also allows you to add macronutrients. So you can add your protein or your carbohydrates and your fats. And then to that, you add your vitamins and your minerals and other antioxidants or anti-inflammatories that you might be needing. So it's less limitations. And another thing that we're seeing is that people are going more towards functional nutrition. So having, I think functional nutrition just means having some sort of nutrient or nutraceutical in a food or a beverage that you take on a daily basis. So this is adding something like curcumin to your breakfast oats or whatever it might be, and you're buying a product that's a functional product. So people are kind of taking combining their supplements with their daily life and their daily meals, which is, I think, the way that things are going.
Yeah.
And having a drink or being able to make that smoothie or something that contains all of your nutrients that you need on a daily basis, instead of having to take those pills, is quite attractive to many people. And it allows for a lot more compliance when we're having to change people's habits. And that's something, a large part of it.
Now, also from like just sort of carbon footprint point of view, you're not throwing away tons of bottles and, you know, little silicon capsules that are keeping things dry. Drives me nuts, the amount of packaging you throw away on a monthly basis just to get your vitamin C in, for example. And you know, what's nice about this is it changes as you do. So if you know you're coming up to flu season and you just need a bit more zinc, you can just have that put into your next round of, you know, your personalized supplement. You have to go out and buy more stuff, which I think we're all getting a bit fatigued with having to buy tons of things every month, not know if it's working for you. You only know if you stop taking it. Where personalization is just so much more useful. And like you say, you can chuck it into a smoothie in the morning and it's done for the day. What I really like, because I've explored the Tailor Blend website quite extensively, is what I'm wanting to do for my athletes is create personalized drinks while they're on their bike or on their run. And I know that, you know, some people need HMB. You don't find HMB anywhere. You've got to really hunt the stuff down, but you know where you need it and for whom. And if somebody is more, you know, keto adapted, you can put your exogenous ketones into this drink, you know, if you know that they work better without glucose. So there's a lot of room to really help people. They don't have to go out there and make expensive mistakes. So I think it's an incredible concept. And yeah, more people should hopefully through channels like this podcast is you know, I'll put the links in the show notes where you can go and have a look and create your own supplements. But also, I'm sure you guys offer assistance. So, I mean, I can put together a formula for a client of mine, but I'm sure if you are working with somebody who's new to the site, just a client, you could be able to advise them as well on what they're needing.
Definitely, yeah. So they can reach out to me and we set up a little call and we do a consult, just chat about your needs and help you through the website. And once you've kind of created your first blend, it's easy going from there. You know what you're doing and you can adjust and tweak every month as you need. So if every time you want to order a new one, you can change the flavor, you can change the sweetener, perhaps you want to do that, or you can change the ingredients in there. And it's quite fun when you're experimenting with yourself. So you can see what adding creatine to your diet might do and see what it does to your body composition or that. So yeah, and I think just out of by default, being able to customize your nutrition is very attractive to athletes. So I think that's we see a lot of interest from athletes, and I like to help endurance athletes with their carbohydrate fueling because it's often challenging for them and with gut issues and definitely the whole hydration thing. People are realizing we need our electrolytes during training, so that's kind of a popular one. And people doing faster, low intensity, long rides on the weekend, they want a drink that doesn't contain 60 grams of carbohydrates. So it's also, it's quite exciting for me to help people have this find solutions to their training needs.
Absolutely. Know. I remember I put together a formula. This was years and years ago. And it's bought it and everything. And then I get this phone call from somebody at Taylor Blend to say, no, this can't work. And I'm like, why? No, it's going to taste terrible. You can't do that. It's not going to be drinkable. I was like, okay, well, you go and tweak it and make it more palatable. It was really kind of cool that somebody came back and said, no, this is going to taste terrible. You won't be able to get it down your throat.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's the sky's the limit on Taylor Blend, but we will be honest with you when there's something's going to be a little bit foul tasting. Yeah. There's a little diagram on the website that as you build your blend, it'll tell you, okay, you're getting to the red zone. This is going to be potentially be a bit bitter or whatever. Some of the nutrients or ingredients that we have tend to have a terrible taste. I mean, or amino acids don't taste bad, but if you leave it for a long time, it might start to taste different. There's a few other ones that have a particularly bitter taste. So then there's sweeteners. Maybe you can use stevia instead of, or xylitol instead of stevia or whatever it might be to counteract that. So, you know.
Mm. Yeah, there's a science to this and it's lots of fun. So, Kirsten, I can't believe we've reached an hour already and there's so much more we could chat about. So I'm definitely, we must plan some more episodes going forward. I think this was an incredible in-depth chat, and I'm hoping people take away a lot of really valuable information from this. You're reachable. I want to put your contacts into the show notes as well. So anyone who's, you know, an athlete or even not an athlete, but really wanting to fine-tune their supplementation, who's got questions, it can get hold of you. And yeah, well, thank you so much for sharing your knowledge and your wisdom today. And we will definitely do this again soon.
Thanks, Nikki. I really enjoyed it. And yeah, I hope we can chat again soon because I think there's lots more to explore.
Thank you once again for joining me for another episode of the Reinvent Health Podcast. As usual, all of my guests' details can be found in the show notes page on Apple Podcast, Anchor, or wherever else you listen to your podcasts. Please don't forget to rate on Apple and leave a review.